Well, good morning. My name is Jonathan North. I'm the men's pastor here at Fellowship Greenville. So if you're new to our church, I want to welcome you. Thanks for joining us this morning. We're going to continue our journey in through Acts chapter 22. We're going to be in Acts chapter 22 as we have been going through the book of Acts since I was 41. I'll be 43 this year. So we'll be in Acts 22, 22. That's where we start. See, it's already fun. 22, 22. Now, just a brief summary of the book of Acts. It is an account of Jesus' first followers. When they see that Jesus is alive, they just can't help but go share the great news about who he is and what he's done. And so through the accounts of Acts, we see how those first followers spread the gospel all across the world, and despite all resistance and opposition, the gospel continued to move forward. And that's awesome, because when you think of moving forward, pretty much in every area of your life, more than likely you've experienced resistance. That resistance can come in good ways, right? I mean, some of it helps us grow. We're challenged by it. We see goals. We meet those goals. We celebrate it. It's awesome. On the other hand, as we move forward, there is resistance that just is exhausting and sometimes just absolutely painful. When I'm going through those places in my life, which is very frequent, this is a question that comes to my mind. It's probably a question you've thought of and comes to your mind on a regular basis, and that is this: do I have what it takes? Do I have what it takes to move forward in this situation? You probably ask this question, and it happens all the time in random locations sometimes. You never know. I mean, in Walmart one day, no joke, this question really came to my mind. If you've ever been in Walmart, do you have what it takes? That's a realistic question there. So this is recent. My wife has she's pregnant with our third child, so she had been the primary grocery shopper, and I was like, no, there's no way you're not going to do this. I mean, you know, pregnant and dragging around kids, I'm going to do this. I'm stepping in, right? I'm going to do this. She's like, are you sure? I'm like, totally. I've got this. Yeah. Just text me the list on my way home from work. I'll pick it up. No big deal, right? Up until this point, man, I knew I had what it takes because I had been on special assignments, right? Like on the way home, pick up this, pick up that. You know, just a handful of things, and I always, boom, I nailed it. Sometimes I come in, hey, surprise, I got steaks. I've been to the store. I know what this takes. So I go, and I'm pulling in, and I get the text. I said, you know, text me the list. And, you know, I'm walking in, and I start scrolling. Yeah, and I'm scrolling, and I'm scrolling. And I'm like, who, what families? Is this for the neighborhood? I mean, this is what we do every week. I don't even want to know how much this costs. I mean, and I immediately am intimidated. You know, and the question comes to my mind, do I have what it takes? Man, I've never, this is the big leagues, okay? This is a major transition. But, you know, I'm the men's pastor, right? Like, man up, get a cart, and let's go. Boy, this is exhausting. And let me tell you, it's exhausting for my wife as well, because you know what's happening. I'm texting my poor bride. Yeah, she's trying to get rest, right? And I'm like, yogurt. So what flavor? I mean, what brand? And where is it? Hey, milk. I know I drink it every night, but the colors are not the same as Publix. What percent? Where's the bread? Okay, I found the bread. Now, what bread do we need? When you say lunch bread, it's like a whole aisle of bread. Okay, you want odor-free, stain-free, chlorine-free, dye-free laundry detergent? Am I supposed to be at Earth Fair? I mean, do they even make that? Whew. This is exhausting. So literally, I'm not kidding. I'm going in the random pattern. I mean, back and forth and all the way around. And at one lap, I mean, I should have had 26.1 on my back. I was putting some miles on. Is that 26.1? Anyway. I was spending some miles on, and coming around one time, here comes this lady. She comes in, and man, she's ready. She's got her running shoes on, and she's only got four kids with her, okay? And she is tracking with purpose. in what it took me 2 hours, I'm not kidding, to try and come up with, she has already got all that in her cart, and it is organized. It's not just in her cart, it's organized, and she is going around. And so finally, I just start asking her for help. Like, where's this, where is this? You know, I mean, like, this is awesome, right? And then she catches on. I'm like, okay, I'm going to fade away. I'm exhausted. I find myself in the pharmacy section, and I'm fading. You know, that you can put your arm in it. What is that, a blood pressure thing? I'm like, I'm going to try that out. I don't know, even know what the numbers mean. I know I'm fading, though. I'm just kind of walking in circles, and she comes up. She's like, what are you looking for now? Aluminum foil and marshmallows. That's cotton balls, okay? She's like, okay, first of all, don't come back on this side of the store. All your stuff is over there, and she gives me the aisle number, what side it's going to be on, what I'm going to see as I get closer. I mean, it's like Google Maps. It's like Waze. I'm like, you should be an app. You've got what it takes. I don't. I don't have what it takes. That's it. But now, obviously, you know, the question of do you have what it takes has got a much higher stake on it than usually a typical Walmart shopping excursion. I mean, really, when you ask the question, do you have what it takes, it always comes with something. Do I have what it takes to do blank? Do I have what it takes to lead my family? Do I have what it takes to serve my spouse? Do I have what it takes to hear a health report wasn't prepared for? I mean, what does it take to do that, to live through that, when the finances aren't exactly where I want them to be, where I'm not exactly where I need to be with God, where maybe you're dealing with something right now, something that might be controlling you, and you're trying to figure out, what does it take to break free from this? So this is a question that we all have that goes through our minds on a regular basis. And usually with that question, there's some qualifiers. Because when you say, do you have what it takes? The question is really, are you qualified? And there's three qualifiers, and there may be more, but there's three I'm going to use today. And one of them is, the question is, who am I? Somebody was to interview you, they'd say, who are you? Meaning, who are you? What's your story? Do you have experience? Do you have the right credentials? Do you have what it takes? Another question is, okay, this is a good one. Who is going to judge my performance? I kind of like to know who's going to be judging my performance. That's very important, which leads to the last one, and that is, what's going to be the verdict? Because I'm not going to know if I have what it takes until I get the verdict. So these are important questions, and they're actually found in the text today in Acts 22, and they're found not just in the text. This is an intense passage. I mean, there is a lot of activity and drama in the text. There is the whole Roman Empire. So you've got the Roman Empire, and you're in Jerusalem, so you are with the craziest religious people you could possibly be around at the time, and you're going to see that here in just a minute. And they seem to all have all the cards and be pulling all the strings. Now, let me tell you about Jerusalem at this time, man. It is busting at the seam with people who are furious, and they are angry at one person, and his name is the Apostle Paul. He's one of the guys that's been spreading the gospel, and they're opposed to it. They don't like his message. They've accused him of bringing a Gentile, which is a non-Jew, which they do not like, into the temple. And so he's been already beaten up a little bit when we get to this place. And where we are right now is Paul is on the steps of the Roman fortress, which is on one corner of the temple, because the Roman soldiers have come in to actually rescue him from the riot. This mob is out of control. And so on the steps of this fortress, which is huge, this fortress stands like 75 feet tall. It overlooks the temple, so the Roman soldiers could see all the activity in the temple and the temple courtyards. And this temple area was huge. It was magnificent. It was at least the size of 10 football fields. So there was a lot going on. And so this fortress could hold 600 soldiers at any given time. It was in and of itself kind of like a small town that could take care of all these soldiers. Not only that, but they had planned tunnels underground that went from the fortress to key areas in the temple courtyards so that when riots and conflicts took place, the soldiers could actually get there quicker than having to get through the crowd. So in essence, the Romans have planned that the religious people are going to have a lot of conflicts. There's going to be riots. So this isn't the first time. So when we come on the scene here, Paul is sharing his story about how Jesus has changed his life. And amazingly, this crowd has stopped to listen to him. Now, he's gained the ear of the crowd who's been shouting and wanting to kill him. He tells his story, and it's like crickets. And at this point, you're thinking, man, this guy's got what it takes. How on earth has he gotten control of the crowd so quickly? Man, he's going to get through this. No, he's not. He's not. In fact, he's going to get a kind of a bad job review, a performance review on this one, because he drops one more statement and the crowd goes furious. He says, "So this Jesus that saved me, the Lord, he told me to go tell the Gentiles and to go into Rome, go as far as I can, and tell them how much God loves them." Now, the people he's talking to have been raised their whole life and generations before that God loves them, and that's about where the love runs out. I mean, they have no concern. They do not like the Gentiles, so the idea that he would be doing this gets them all worked up. And here's where we are in verse 22. Read a little bit. Just this is amazing. "Up to this word, they listened to him. Then they raised their voices." Just check this out. "Away with such a fellow from the earth, for he should not be allowed to live." And as they were shouting, they were throwing off their cloaks and flinging dirt in the air. And the first thing that comes to my mind is the kid in the grocery store. You know, they're not getting their way, and they're screaming, and they're having a tantrum, and they're throwing stuff. And, you know, it's like, where's their mama? Like, all these men are throwing their cloaks up and dust. Can you imagine the scene? I hope it's not pollen season. I mean, this is crazy. Men, grown men are behaving like this. But this is how intense. This is their rage against the idea that anybody would want to share the good news to the Gentiles. Now, so that's just a peek into what's happening in the story to kind of set you up for how strong and divisive the situation is. Now, there's a lot in this passage, so I'm not going to read through the whole thing. I'm going to give you hopefully a good summary of it, and then we're going to dive into two or three different places. So once Paul tells the story and the riot starts back up, the Romans pull him back in into the barracks, but they don't know what's going on. They don't know if he's guilty. They don't know what. They can't get a straight answer from anybody. So their interrogation process is they're going to flog Paul. Now, flogging, most of you probably know this, it is torturous, it is brutal, it is a whip with things on the end that are designed to go right into the back and pull flesh out. This is, instead of saying, "Hey, so tell me your story," they're like, this is the first thing, that this is how we interrogate. So this is a brutal thing. Now, he escapes this torture by telling them, "I'm a Roman citizen," which they were not expecting. Now, for a Roman citizen, you don't treat them like this. You give them clearly a fair trial, you don't bound them, and you certainly don't flog them. So they shifted gears really quickly. So that's a good scenario. Then the Tribune asked him some more questions, making sure he was a Roman citizen. And he gets to know the Tribune, the officer in charge, and we'll talk more about that in a minute. Now, he needs clarity, the officer and commander, he needs clarity about what's going on. So the next day, he takes him out of the barracks, and they convene the Jewish council in the court there in the temple. This Jewish council, if you can imagine, 70 elders, the elite of the elite spiritual religious people of the day. And even within that group, they don't agree with each other. In fact, there is a huge division within this group of men. So the men are not being mature in this story right now, except for Paul. So he goes before them, and long story short, he calls the high priest out and tells him he's a fraud. He sides with one group of the Pharisees in the middle of a brawl. It gets more violent and to the point where in the scene in the council room, it's so violent that they're afraid Paul is going to be torn into pieces. So the Roman soldiers actually rescue him out of this violence and take him back to the barracks. And the scene ends with this in verse 11 of chapter 23. So I know I covered some ground there. The following night, the Lord stood beside him and said, "Take courage and testify to the facts about me in Jerusalem. So you must testify also to Rome. Go tell them this story." So in essence, the Lord said, "Take courage. Let's go share this story in Rome." Paul still standing in the barracks when this is all over. Now let's just go back and review two or three of these scenes. Now we're going to just go through them based on those three questions. The first one is, who am I? Do I have what it takes? Who am I? Do I have the right credentials? The answer for Paul in the first scene when he goes back to the barracks and they're about to brutally interrogate him, he's got the right credentials. He says, "Hey, I'm a Roman citizen." Now, as soon as they find this out, here we go back to the tribune, because this is important. Tribune's just one guy. He's the commanding officer, basically. And he says, so he goes up to Paul and he says, "Okay, tell me you are a Roman citizen. I want to make sure." And Paul says, "Yes." Now, this is interesting. The tribune says, "Now, I paid a large sum to be a citizen, to be a Roman citizen." And Paul says, "I am a citizen by birth." Now, Lysias is the tribune, Claudius Lysias. And what we know about him is he's really a good guy. In fact, you're going to hear more about him in the next week or so. He takes care of Paul. He's a good soldier. He serves well. He's a noble guy. He's really helpful in helping move Paul and the gospel forward. But when he says he has to pay a large sum of money to become a Roman citizen, what that means is not only did he have to pay a high price, but he also had to break the law. It was not legal at that time, or any time really, to buy. You couldn't just buy a citizenship. You could, well, just like any day and age, you could bribe somebody. You could pay them enough to the point where they're like, okay. And somehow, some way, you compromise the legal system and you get it. And so that's what happened. You know, Lysias was probably wealthy, comes from a wealthy family, and he bribed from historical documents, he probably bribed the emperor himself. Okay, so this is kind of the scene here with Lysias. Now, here's a point that in this observation I'd just like to make is, for Lysias and for us, we might need to hear this. A new identity always comes with a cost. A new identity, anytime you are trying to change your identity or prove yourself, it often comes with a cost. And the kicker is, it's never really a guarantee. Did I get the right thing? I mean, is it going to work? I might pay the price, but there's no guarantee. Here's the point, in fact. Think of the global situation we're in right now, where millions of people have left to try and get away from tyranny, out of their countries. Some of them have left their families, taken their families, they've risked their lives. They have paid bribe after bribe to try and get where they need to be, and yet they're on the border and they can't cross. There's millions of them, and they're waiting, and they're trying to get across, but no matter what they've done, no matter how much they paid, there's just never a guarantee. In fact, some of them are going back home now. They're so tired of it. And this is a good picture of life for us too. Not just for that, but in our culture, we often can reinvent ourselves, right? When it comes to identity, right now more than any time, this is the buzzword. And when it comes to social media, you can frame your life. You can actually stage your life in photos. You can post your life. You can choose what you want people to see. You can basically say, this is who I am. This is my family. I can pay this price. I can compromise. I can hide things. I can reinvent myself. I can just keep changing and changing until I get what I want. And then if that doesn't work, I can do it again. A new identity always is going to cost. It's going to cost you to keep up with the bills, to stay at a certain standard. It's always going to cost you. It's going to compromise somewhere along the way, and there's never a guarantee. And that's where Lysias is. Now, on the other hand, here's Paul. And where Paul is it really pays off when you don't have to prove yourself. Think about it. All Paul has to say is, I'm a Roman citizen. I was born a Roman citizen. Can you imagine what it felt like for Paul after being beat up, tossed around, yelled at, screamed at, to finally simply say one thing? This is who I am. I'm a Roman citizen. I don't have to prove myself. I can stop. I can slow down. Can you just imagine how he just... I don't have to prove myself on this one. I can just slow down, take a break. Do you know what that feels like? Do you know what it feels like? You know, maybe it's at the end of the day or wherever, when finally, somehow, some way, you can stop and you don't have to prove yourself. It's a load off, man. It is so relaxing when you don't have to prove yourself. And this is where finally Paul gets. He just gets to catch his breath. He has the right credentials. He has what it takes for round one. Who am I? I've got what it takes, right? But guess what? There's round two. It's coming, and it always comes. It comes in our life. You know what? Every time you catch your breath, guess what? Something else is going to happen. I like how Tommy Nelson, pastor in Denton, says it. It's like this. You get thrown into the ocean with a life jacket that's one size too small. Think about it. It's not going to necessarily drown you, but it's not going to keep you up like it needs to. So you're constantly coming up just long enough to catch your breath before you go back down again. This is what it's like to have to prove yourself day in and day out. This is what it's like for Paul. He steps into round two, day two. Now, the tribune has brought him into the council to help get some clarity about what's going on with the situation and why everybody was accusing Paul. This is the right step for Lysias to take just to get this clarity. So Paul is before the council, and this is the first thing that comes out of his mouth. Now imagine, he's in front of people who spend all day trying to live right. They live by laws, they do the rituals to prove that they're worthy of God's approval. They're working all day at it. Paul comes in and he says, hey, I've lived a good life before God in all conscience up to this day. Now, that's basically him saying, God approves of my conduct and of my heart. Can you imagine what guys who've been working their whole day lives to be like? Are you serious? You're just going to come in here and all of a sudden I'm worthy? I've proven myself. God loves me. That's crazy. And they had a hard time with this, especially the high priest. He's like, are you kidding me? Dude, I'm the high priest. I'm the big dog. I'm the boss. In terms of Jewish authority, I'm the top. I'm untouchable. There's nobody, and you're going to sit here and say that. Strike him in his mouth. That's what he says. Whoever's close to him, strike him in the mouth right now. See, here's the deal. The high priest is the dude, right? I mean, he's in charge. He's gotten so high above himself, he's forgotten the law he's actually supposed to be honoring. So he orders this strike, and then this is what Paul responds in response. He says, God is going to strike you, you whitewashed wall. Can you imagine the courage of Paul to say that in the midst of a room that's already heated and aimed against him? You whitewashed wall. I mean, this is the guy. Do y'all remember? I'm gonna track back a few ages, decades. This is some lyrics, proverbial, from this guy named Jim Croce. Does anybody know this? You don't pull on Superman's cape. Do you know this? You don't spit into the wind. You don't pull the mask off the old Lone Ranger, and you don't mess around with. All right, okay, that was close. You don't mess with a high priest, and you don't pull the mask off, but that's exactly what he does. He pulls the mask right off of the high priest. He says, "You are a whitewashed wall." Basically, that means the wall is rotting, and the only thing you've got is a shiny, fresh coat of paint. You're empty on the inside. Wow. Man, he just calls him out right there. Basically, you're crumbling and you don't even know it. You're just crumbling on the inside. Your heart is so hardened and broken, the foundation, at any minute, you could crumble. Let me ask you, you may be sitting here today ready to crumble. You might have already crumbled. Something is going on in your life, and there's been empty spots that have been found. You're crumbling. Some of you are trying to figure out, how on earth am I going to pick up the pieces of my life? Is it even possible? I mean, that is a real scenario for many of you in here, probably. Are you hiding something? I mean, is there just nothing but a thin layer of paint hiding something that needs to come out into the light so you can be free? Because this is kind of where the high priest was. Let me ask you, when you crumble, when in moving forward you face the resistance, let me ask you, what standards do you go by that you think is going to put you back together? And when you start crumbling, what is your go-to? Is it trying to find a new identity? Trying to prove something, somebody you're not? Is it performance? If I can just do this? The thing is, what I know about me is when I set my own standards, I condemn myself. My wife says it all the time. You are so hard on yourself. It's just impossible to live up to our own standards. Are you going to live by somebody else's standards? Are you going to try and say, hey, if I can just perform, if I can just do this, my life can come back together? Is that really going to help you? Paul's argument to the priest is really just straightforward. It's perfect. He says, you're just not living by your own standards. You can't even live by your own standards. And we know this, that when we're trying to prove ourselves, when we're trying to live by those standards, we're just busy. I mean, the religious Pharisees, the Sadducees, they were so busy trying to keep up with proving themselves to everybody. Check this out. The Pharisees had created 600 laws. 365 of them are negative. I'm guessing that's not good. 300, that's one every day. Can you imagine trying to live up to that type of performance, to that type of standard? And Jesus, years before Paul gets on the scene, he is trying to help the Pharisees understand this is not the way. There's a better way. He says it like this. He says, man, I've got two laws that will summarize everything. You've got 600. It's simple. Love God with all your heart, soul, and mind, and love others. Love God, love others. It's pretty simple. Don't make this so complicated. In terms of performance, this is how Jesus addressed the Pharisees and others. Come to me, all who are labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart. And you will find rest for your souls. That's what Jesus says. Jesus says, When you're broken, when you're crumbled, when your heart is hardened, guess what? I have what it takes to make you whole. I will give rest for your soul. He says, my yoke is easy and my burden is light. But the Pharisees never caught on. Their hearts continued to harden. Their hearts continued to harden. They tried to prove themselves to each other. They raised standards that divided them. And so in this courtroom scene, Paul knows that their standards are so high, it won't take anything to divide them. And he looks at everybody. He realizes we've got the Sadducees over here, the Pharisees over here. I'm gonna make one statement, and this thing is going to blow off the lid. It's crazy. He says, I'm a Pharisee, and I believe in the hope and the resurrection. Long story short, I'm siding with this crowd. The Sadducees blow up. Everybody blows up. They get so mad at Paul, and they're disagreeing and they're arguing. And finally, some of the Pharisees say, man, we don't find anything wrong with them. In your face, Sadducees. I mean, this is like, let's just keep pushing. And they have to pull Paul out of the scene so he's not torn into pieces. And then the following night, the Lord stood by him and said, take courage, for as you have testified to all the facts about me in Jerusalem, you must testify also in Rome. Now, does he get a verdict? Is it clear what the verdict is? I mean, the Roman citizenship didn't get him out of the jam. Being a Pharisee didn't get him out of jam. He is currently without a verdict. Now, I know what life looks like when I'm still waiting for the verdict. This is what Tim Keller says. He says this, with every form of identity and every other badge of accolade we might award ourselves, it is always the case of a verdict coming from performance. We might find security in labeling ourselves as a good person, as a free person, a religious person, or a moral person. Whatever it is, it's always the same. The performance leads the verdict, but the verdict never comes. Do you feel that way right now? I mean, have the standards that you've been trying to live by, the people you've been trying to prove yourself to, and you don't ever seem to feel like their verdict ever comes. And that's where Paul is on one level. The trial is over, but there's no verdict. But what he knows to be true is that the real trial is over. And the verdict has come back. The trial above this trial and above any other trial. The trial where man is on trial before God. There was a clear point in time when man looked at God and said, I'm going to live by my own standards. I think I got this one figured out. And we know what that looks like. Rebellion, turmoil between us and between God. And it's not possible to get back on track when you rebel with God. It's not possible to live up to his standards at that point, but see, there's good news, and a lot of you know this, and I want to remind you. This verdict only comes because of Jesus. Jesus goes on trial. He's found guilty so that we can be free. He pays the price for our new identity. He dies so that we can live. Paul knew the verdict. The whole time, he knew that he was free no matter what the scenario was. He was free. He says this in Romans, out of sheer generosity, he put us in right standing with him. It was a pure gift. He got us out of the mess we were restored the way we always wanted to be. That's because of Jesus. That's the verdict of not guilty. He goes on to say, there is therefore no condemnation for those who are in Christ. The verdict has come in, you are not guilty, and there's no condemnation. You can live without feeling guilty. You can live in the freedom of knowing Jesus has set you free, and every day he offers that to you, and you can live in that. It wasn't Paul's performance, it was Christ's performance. He said, the gospel is the power to salvation. It's not Paul, it's Jesus. So here's the wrap up. Here's the big idea. Because we have to, it just kind of comes together like this in the passage as we follow it. It says, and I want to read this. This is the big idea. As believers, we get to live on this side of the verdict. Christianity is the only place where the verdict, listen to that, Christianity is the only place where the verdict comes before the performance. Do you hear that? You have freedom to live and put Christ on display. You have freedom to perform because of the verdict. You don't have to live and strive to prove yourself. You get to enjoy putting Christ on display and living on this side of the verdict. There's no other system that does that. No standards you have, no standards anybody else has. The verdict here always comes before the performance. And so when Jesus stands beside Paul in this barracks, you're thinking, man, this guy's he's still not free, but he's the only free guy in the story. He's probably in the dark in a prison cell, but he's the only one truly living in the light. He can see what they cannot see because Jesus has made him free. Jesus is standing beside him. Do you need to be reminded that that's what Jesus does with his followers? He stands beside us after a long day, after you've been beaten up, after you've faced opposition, after you've crumbled. The Lord stands beside you and he says, take courage. Take courage and live in this freedom and share this gospel with those all around you. You have the freedom to live on this side of the verdict. I'm going to pray, and the next song that Matt's going to sing, I want you to hear these words as if God is standing beside you and speaking these words, because the words on this song are just so true. Jesus, we love you. Thank you that we can be free of performance. Thank you that the gospel has what it takes for us to continue to move forward in freedom without having to prove ourselves. Thank you for what you've given us. We love you so much. Amen.